And FYI, you're listening to Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP on 101.5 FM, and Nick Espinosa of the Deep Dive Radio Show. And in web browser news, a researcher recently found a vulnerability in literally every major web browser out there. So take your pick, Chrome, Firefox, Microsoft Edge, et cetera, et cetera. Now, they are calling this vulnerability wave through, and basically it resides in what is called a cross-origin request. Now, I'm not going to get into the technical details of a cross-origin request, but this vulnerability resides in the way browsers handle cross-origin requests to video and audio files, which, if exploited, could allow remote attackers to read the content of things like, let's say, your Gmail or Facebook messages and all of that. And so the researcher that found this, Jake Archibald, basically, you know, has submitted this and is for public review. And hopefully the browsers are going to update themselves, so Chrome and Firefox, et cetera, to fix this issue. But this also may impact websites as well because of how the browsers are interacting with the actual websites and how the websites are delivering content. So this is potentially a very huge issue worldwide that almost every website and browser is going to have until it's fixed. And so we need to make sure that we're very careful and running good security on our machines and make sure we're going to HTTPS and not HTTP whenever possible, because that is essentially the secure socket layer, the transport layer security that can protect us pretty well. That's the none of this doesn't circumvent this specific vulnerability wave through, but it does ensure that we have a greater amount of security while we're browsing. So keep that in mind. And unfortunately, this is another big vulnerability with worldwide consequences. And in US-based privacy news, we are talking about a Supreme Court ruling, which is all kinds of awesome. Now, I know that I've spoken on the radio show and some of my daily videos that I do on YouTube and Twitter and all that kind of stuff, at Nick AESP, FYI, small plug, about privacy. And recently we found out that law enforcement officials were able to log into a service called Securus that was actually pulling real-time data from a company called Location Smart that was getting real-time GPS and location tracking information from the big carriers, Verizon, Sprint, T-Mobile, AT&T, et cetera, et cetera. And it was also found out that Securus was breached, and so hackers got access to the all 2,800 usernames and logins or so, and most of these are law enforcement officials, so that's a serious, serious problem. Well, in the past couple of weeks, Verizon and a couple of the big carriers came out and said they are no longer going to be giving Location Smart and a couple of other major Location Smart competitors this real-time data anymore, because it's, you know, basically they were caught with their hands in the cookie jar, privacy violation, et cetera. But a week after that or so, which would be about last week, about last week or so, the Supreme Court actually ruled on a case that really had nothing to do with that mess, but basically said, we are going to overturn a 40-year-old standing law that basically says third party, if your data is collected by a third party and that third party gives it to law enforcement, aka Location Smart and Securus, that the police don't need a warrant to get this information. The Supreme Court just literally changed that to say, even if you are in with your electronics giving information to a third party, aka I'm on, you know, a cell carrier, for example, let's say Verizon, and I am, by virtue of having a cell phone on Verizon or Sprint or AT&T, they automatically know my location thanks to GPS, cell tower location referencing, all this kind of stuff. It is now illegal for these carriers to give law enforcement this data on me or anybody else in the United States without the police getting a warrant. And so that is a huge shift and a huge privacy win for us out there. So if the police want to find out where you are in real time, they've got to get a warrant. So that's good news. And that is, well, quite frankly, that is awesome news. I'm actually very excited to hear that. And I know privacy wonks everywhere are big fans of this. So we are a little bit more safer and a little bit more private today. And now for the deep dive segment, where we take a closer and deeper look at a cybersecurity, cyber warfare, or technology issue around us. And if you have any suggestions for a deep dive segment or something you'd like me to dive into, you can once again find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP. Again, that's Nick AESP. Or you can send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. That's questions@securityfanatics.com. I am more than happy to take a look at it. And if it meets our standards, we are more than happy to do a deep dive on it. So let's begin. And this week's deep dive is actually going to be a little different. So in mid to late May, I think it was around May 19th or so, I actually gave my very first TEDx talk at TEDx Northbrook Library. And I basically did it on cybersecurity, and the video is due out, you know, very soon. In fact, as you're listening to this, it may actually be out. It's any day now. And I wanted to kind of give you guys, my TED talk here, because I thought it was pretty interesting, and I've gotten a lot of good feedback from people in the audience and those that have seen the preliminary video and all that. And so without further ado, this is Trust Sucks, a TED talk by yours truly. Trust sucks. I believe this. I really do. As a hacker, I have to. However, if I were to have a subtitle for this talk, that subtitle would be one word, and that word would be conditionally. And while most people understand that hacking and breaches occur literally on a daily basis, what most people don't realize is that hackers are successful because of trust. Now, I understand we can't have a society or even a social contract without trust. Trust drives our morality. But we have to learn to filter our trust mechanisms, because in cybersecurity, trust means vulnerability for some very serious reasons. So let's explore trust through this technological lens and see why we shouldn't be so keen to embrace it all the time. Now, if we're looking at trust, trust breaks down into two major categories: cognitive trust and effective trust. Now, cognitive trust is based on our knowledge and evidence about those we choose to trust. We develop this object permanence in our infancy, which means that we understand that objects continue to exist even when they cannot be observed. So, as an example, let's take a look at our local coffee shop. We all have some kind of local coffee shop in our lives. And let's say we've been to this coffee shop 99 times. Our cognitive trust tells us that this coffee shop is going to be safe because we've been there and used this wireless 99 times, and our object permanence is going to tell us that on the 100th visit, the wireless is going to be there. So our cognitive trust naturally tells us it's also going to be safe. And so this is the problem that we have. And this type of cognitive trust can be applied to any infrastructure we choose to connect to, not just Wi-Fi. And so if we're taking a look at the technology in our homes, we trust the wireless router that has been supplied by our internet provider. We assume that it is secure because it comes from a large national corporation like a Comcast or an AT&T. And so our cognitive trust tells us that because millions of people are using these, they must be safe. When the reality is that these routers that are issued by our internet service providers have consistently been shown to have flaws, and those internet service providers have been very slow to patch and update them to protect us. This is the core issue with cognitive trust. And if we're looking at the flip side of trust, we're looking at effective trust. And effective trust is born out of our emotional ties with others, including the security and confidence we place in others based on the feelings generated by our interactions. Because of effective trust, we accept what information we're given by those people, institutions, or technology providers we have elected to trust in our lives. Now, this is as simple as believing a friend's email that they're stranded overseas and needs money, also known as a phishing scam, or that our free email provider we love to use isn't actually going to data mine us in violation of our privacy because they say they won't. This is effective trust in a nutshell. And as an example, due to a social engineering attack, I can make myself anyone I need to be to hit my target. I can intelligence gather and build an attack profile on my target. I'll know where he or she went to school, who their online friends are, what activities they like to do, and from this, I can get into their lives simply by relating to them, not only with common interests, but also because I've made myself that long-lost friend that's finally created a social media account, and by supplying them with just enough information to make me sound like I'm whoever it is I want them to think I am. I am banking on that nostalgia, that effective trust. And so, did you graduate from X college in the year 2000? So did I. Did you study biochemistry? Guess what? So did I. And thanks to Wikipedia, I actually kind of sound like I know what I'm talking about. It's these little bits, these little nuggets that are going to make my target believe me when I say I am who I want them to believe that I am. And so if we're looking at trust overall, from the perspective of society as a whole, here's the thing. we're liars. We really are. In fact, according to Psychology Today, the average person, whether they're lying to themselves or to others, lies two times a day. Twice a day. We are lying twice a day. And if we're looking at the most basic concept for lying, lying is simply this. Lying is the understanding that we have information someone else doesn't, and by virtue of this, we can choose to manipulate the information we deliver to others. Hackers rely on this type of deception to help ensure our success. We literally lie to achieve our goals. And because of this, when we look at trust overall, we can break down what a hacker does into a simple action. We lie to you. That's it. That's all we do. And so if we're analyzing all cyber threats and vulnerabilities out there, we can also break that down into a single, simple concept. Trust is the real vulnerability. Now, our cyber defense is only as good as our weakest vulnerability, and trust is usually this. We trust the free Wi-Fi from that coffee shop. We trust the email from our stuck friend asking for money. We trust that long-lost friend who finally made it onto social media. We trust that cloud provider not to data mine us, or our internet service provider to give us a secure router. We trust. Now, last year was the worst year ever for hacking. In fact, we had reported over 2,200 breaches by major organizations and institutions worldwide. And there's an interesting thing about that 2,200 number. First, we know that that's a mere fraction of the actual breaches and exposures that were out in 2017. And that 6 billion number, that 2,200 number, is from the first 6 months of 2017 alone. And this year, we are far on track to exceed that. So how do we as a society combat this massive vulnerability that is trust? We must understand that when it comes to trust in terms of technology, trust has to end at the water's edge. We must create a new filter of distrust for our thinking and perceptions. And when it comes to information delivery, and with this new filter, we must also apply a second factor of authentication for our thought process. So for example, is that friend really stranded overseas? I should verify that first before I actually send the money. And finally, we mustn't shun critical thinking. We cannot use faith when dealing with our cybersecurity logic. Now, faith may be a virtue where trust plays heavily, but in technology, faith will get you hacked. So please, join me in my distrust of everyone and everything online. It's surprisingly a lot more relaxing than you may think. Thank you. And that was my TED Talk for May, and I hope you guys enjoyed it. And again, look for it on, you know, TED and TEDx's YouTube channels or their website and all of that. Very excited to bring that to you guys, but I hope you enjoyed it. And that is why trust sucks. So stay safe and stay online. And as always, thanks for listening. And FYI, you're listening to Huntley Community Radio, WHRULP on 101.5 FM, and Nick Espinoza of the Deep Dive Radio Show. And now for the tip of the week. And if you have an idea for a tip of the week, I am all ears. I'm more than happy to entertain anything. You can find me at Facebook and Twitter at Nick A. ESP, or you can send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com, and I'm more than happy to give you a shout out here for your tip of the week. Let's begin. And this week's tip of the week is on selecting the right products and making sure that they're up to date. So you have a lot of different choices when you go and you buy routers or wireless access points, laptops, computers, hard drives, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I think it's important to, you know, do a couple of different things. One, do your homework on the product. Make sure that it actually has really, really good reviews, that it seems like it has a good, good shelf life. If you're looking at hardware as well, you can look at something called MTBF, or medium time between failures, which will basically tell you how long the device or appliance or whatever is expected to be operating. And that's very important, because most of the stuff should be able to withstand 80 to 100,000 hours of operation before it starts to have problems and issues. The other thing you want to look at is the cybersecurity side of this. You know, do these products you know, adhere to cybersecurity policies? Can you encrypt them? Can you easily change passwords? Do they do things, especially on the firewall side, like scan for viruses? So you can buy a router that will actually protect you before your virus scanner on your computer would even kick in. And the best way to make sure that the viruses don't get to your computer would be to stop them before they get there. And that's what a good router or firewall is going to do. So make sure you're looking for something like a UTM or Unified Threat Management based firewall to help you with that. Now, the flip side of that is we need to also make sure that the companies we're buying the equipment from are regularly releasing updates and patches for this. Sometimes they're called firmware updates. Now, we update primarily for two different reasons. The first reason is that we're either adding performance or features because the company that made the product decided that, you know what, we can optimize it to make it run faster, or we can add more features to it that we didn't necessarily have. And the second, more important reason that we update is for cybersecurity. And a lot of patches, most of them, are because the manufacturer has discovered or has been told of a vulnerability in the product and then is releasing a patch before the code for that vulnerability is released to the world, so every hacker has it. And so you need to make sure that what you are buying, the company is good with patches. And that usually means spending a little bit more and buying a name brand that is on top of those things. The smaller companies, you know, may have awesome products, but a lot of times they are very slow to turn around development when threats are out there, which leaves you exposed and vulnerable. So make sure that whatever you're getting, one, has a good time of, you know, good median time before failure, meaning it has good longevity. Make sure it's got really good reviews. Make sure it's from a reputable company. Make sure that company is updating it and releasing firmware updates or patches for that product all the time. And if you're keeping these three things into account, then you're going to be much better. And always keep in mind how you can stop infections or maliciousness or hackers from getting into your computers by putting something in front of it. So make sure that what you have in front of your computers, namely that router, that firewall, that wireless access point, has good security built into it, like antivirus. And so this has been your tip of the week. And guys, continue to stay safe out there. And now let's take some questions from the audience. And if you would like your question read on air, you can find me at Facebook and Twitter at Nick AESP, as I know I've mentioned before. And also you can send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. And I am more than happy to give you a shout out and answer anything about cybersecurity, cyber warfare, and technology that is on your mind. So with that, let's begin. And Scott from Greenville, South Carolina, actually responded to a video that I had made, and I do daily videos on, you know, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, etc. And a video I recently did was about four new major issues we have with cell phones, and basically the 4G LTE system that is outside of the phone, is basically researchers found a way to easily compromise that. And so persistent attackers like intelligence agencies or well-funded groups would be able to hijack our data as it's leaving the phone or redirect us and all of that. And then the other thing I was talking about in that video was bad batteries. So basically you can hijack and hack a smart battery, put it into a phone, and then that smart battery is going to start sending back a whole bunch of intimate data about your phone, including what you're doing on it, to the hacker. And so researchers found that, and that's a serious issue. And so Scott wrote me as a result of that and said, are there any best practices to treat this, especially, at the business level? You know, would using a VPN help? And Scott, thank you very much for the question from my video. And short answer is yes, a VPN would help in that way, because let's say you're connected to the LTE 4G service from your carrier. If you're running it through a VPN, basically what they're going to be capturing in that pipe is going to be, at least on the data side, when you're doing internet things or app work, they're basically going to be catching encrypted data. Now, on the cellular side, in terms of making phone calls, or if you're using the actual text message service from your carrier, that may not go through the VPN, because technically that may be running as a separate entity in how it is connecting and communicating with LTE. However, you know, a VPN is definitely going to help in a situation like that. The other thing that you can do is you can get VPNs. You can also get different apps and programs on there that are going to make sure that your DNS can't be hijacked as well. Because even if you're running a VPN, if somebody is hijacking your DNS upstream, they can still reroute your phone. And for those of you that don't know what DNS is, basically when you go to a site, let's say google.com, you're actually going to a block of you're actually going to a block of numbers, and DNS is that which resolves it. So you type in Google, and then the DNS figures out that Google is this set of numbers and takes you there. And so if a hacker is able to hijack that, they're able to basically say, oh, Google actually goes to a different block of numbers and routes you wherever they want, usually to advertisement or malicious sites and all of that. And that's a serious problem. And so there are apps that will allow us to enhance DNS security on top of it. But overall, the way this is going to get fixed is when the carriers and those that have developed LTE actually fix and patch that and then roll that out to the entire infrastructure. Now, on the battery side of this, this is actually really important because a lot of people buy third-party batteries, they buy third-party batteries online, and that ends up being a serious problem because, you know, one, you're getting them for cheaper, and two, you don't necessarily know who the vendor is, and a hacker could set up a shop selling, you know, bad batteries, or rather hacked batteries, you know, to smartphones that you're inserting into the smartphone, or you're having your, you know, sealed phone opened and then replaced because the battery's starting to die. And that's a problem. So the easy way to combat that is to just, you know, spend a little bit more money and actually get an OEM battery from your maker. So if it's an Apple, go get an Apple battery. If it's a Samsung, Samsung, LG, LG, etc. And that's a very easy way to combat that. Just don't use third-party battery sellers because you don't necessarily know, you know, if the battery is going to be legitimate. And I'm sorry for third-party battery sellers out there, but, you know, this is the reality that we face right now is that if we can hack a smart battery, which, you know, integrates and is very intuitive into your system, that means we can hack it to do malicious things. So we have to be aware of that. And Scott, thank you so much for the question. And also thanks for listening and for watching my video. I really, really appreciate that. And Steven from Kansas City wants to know, can you really trust app reviews? And Steven, thank you. You know, this is actually a really interesting question because short answer is, I think it's kind of a mixed bag. Now, I know a lot of us do read crowdsourced reviews, meaning, you know, we'll go to, let's say, Amazon before we get into apps, see a product, and then we know that, you know, it has 1,000 reviews, mostly positive, et cetera, et cetera. And then we make our choices on that. Apps, though, are slightly different in the sense that you have people that, you know, can rate and rank apps, you know, stars, not give a description, all of this kind of stuff. But interestingly enough, this basically, I think what you're essentially getting at is, can app developers game the system and put up fake reviews? And the short answer is yes. Now, you can Google and basically pay for app reviews. And so there are services out there that will download multiple times your app and install it to boost your numbers, then give you 5-star ratings on your app, you know, all that kind of stuff with reviews. Depends on how much you want to pay and all of that. So the short answer is, yes, it is very possible. Now, typically what tends to outweigh that, is most app developers, unless they are making an absolute ton of money, are not going to be able to put a huge amount of apps out there. And app rankings are important to them because the more positive apps and downloads they have, the higher the higher in the system they're going to be for either Google or Apple. They might get featured, which is really going to just, you know, shoot them up to the stratosphere. And so they pay to kind of get to that level. But when you get to kind of that tipping point, if you will, and now you're starting to get millions of downloads, your reviews start to weigh significantly more towards the legitimate side. And that gives you an actual real good weighted score of what it is. So what I would recommend is, one, sticking to app developers that are digitally signed and that we know are, you know, solid and reputable app makers, meaning they have a history of making apps that have had millions of downloads and are very popular. And two, if you're looking at reviews, I would stay away probably from an app that has, let's say, you know, 100 reviews or something like that, that can easily be purchased for that. I would look at apps that are, you know, that have hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of likes, follows, downloads, reviews, you know, good or bad, whatever that is. Now, that said, I'm not also trying to quash, you know, the dreams of a young developer that is creating something, because there are some truly brilliant and amazing apps out there that nobody has heard of or found or, you know, get very little traction because it's an honest person that's really not paying for it. And so on the flip side, if there's an app that's been out and has gone through revisions and only has a handful of reviews, it could very well be legitimate that app developers simply not playing the game, and what they're putting out is a solid product that few people have in fact reviewed, and it has a little, you know, less download. That may be safe as well. And so I would read the reviews with a critical eye. I would take everything that I just said into account, you know, but if you've got people that are really purchasing these things, and you're going to start to see really negative reviews on top of the positive ones. And if you've got a whole bunch of like boilerplate looking positive reviews and a whole bunch of negative ones that really deep dive into how much this app sucks, you know, it's probably a good chance the app actually sucks. The other thing that you can do is you can go to social media platforms. If you're really interested in trying to research something, a lot of them will advertise on like Facebook, for example, and you'll get actual Facebook users chiming in saying, oh my God, this was a waste of time, or this looks pointless, or, you know, this app has changed my life, you know, whatever that is. So take that into account when you are going through apps, but it's a pretty straightforward process. And just, you know, just take into the account what I've said. Thanks. And thank you so much for tuning in this week. It was another fun show, and I think we covered a lot of really good stuff, and I hope you guys enjoyed it as much as I did. It was a really good time, and I hope you keep tuning in. Thank you very much for listening to the Deep Dive Radio Show here with Nick Espinoza. And if you have any comments, suggestions, questions, absolutely anything, once again, you can find me on Facebook and Twitter at Nick A ESP. Again, that's Nick A ESP. And you can always send an email to questions@securityfanatics.com. Don't be shy. I love the feedback. We've been having a great time with the show. And as always, stay safe and stay online, everyone. Thanks for listening.